You know what it is. That's right. It's time to talk money with your money nerd and financial coach. Now, tighten those purse strings and open those ears. It's the Money Talk with Tiff podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm so excited because I have Scott Jelinek on the line. Now, Scott is here to talk to us about a concept that I've never heard before, and so I was curious to have him on, and that is slow flips. So, hey Scott, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, Tiffany. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So, let's just hop right into it. What is a slow flip, and how did we get here?
So, we only have 2 hours for this podcast, so I'm going to give you a short version. But slow flips are basically, it's flipping a property as slowly as possible for the fastest path to wealth. And so what it actually is we buy low-end properties with short-term mortgages and we sell them. So there's two sides, a buy side and a sell side. Then we sell them immediately on long-term mortgages. So we don't operate like a landlord, we operate like a bank. So we pay them off in 5 years, and yet we sell them on a 30-year mortgage. And I know that's a real short version because I'm trying to make it brief for you. But we buy properties on 5-year mortgages and we sell them on 30-year mortgages. People always say we buy them like a car and we sell them like a house.
Interesting. So what made you get into slow flips? Like, how did that even come about?
So to give you a short version, once again, I've been real estate investing since 1994. And I know that makes me feel really old every time I say that. And I did conventional rentals. I did the Burr method for years and I was all over it and I loved it until the bust. And then I got crushed. And after I got crushed, you know, I had 84 houses going into the bust and I had 84 mortgages and I got crushed and I lost about 55 of them to foreclosure. Well, as I was recovering from that, I started seeing there were still people who were doing really well. When everyone else got busted up and went back to their jobs and went back to their previous lives, there were still people doing really well. And I started paying attention to what they were doing different. And what they were doing different, which goes against what everybody teaches, and it goes against everything I believed at the time, but they owned everything free and clear. And I was wholeheartedly against free and clear. I knew everything they taught, leverage, right? And all of that. And I was all about it. But then I learned they were crushing it even during the bust when everyone else went out of business. So we were at an interesting time where houses were at the best price they've ever been, but I had no credit left. I had no money left and I had no way to buy them. So I had to come up with a plan to be able to buy them with private money, but not hard money because I couldn't pay them off in 4 or 6 months. So I had to get amortized loans. And so I basically did the math on what's the quickest I can pay these off and not have a balloon, just actually pay them off. And that's where we came up with the 5-year plan. But then also in doing rentals, as I'm sure you know, the expense on the maintenance was outrageous. And so I was coming up with a plan on how could we no longer spend that money, which is where we came up with the sales side of the slow flip. We call it kind financing, where we sell it with long-term owner financing. So these people can put $3,000 to $5,000 down and have a monthly payment and never have an increase in their payment and never have to move. And they're paying it off just as if they got a loan from a bank.
Very interesting. Now, I want to back you up a little bit because you threw out a lot of jargon and you probably didn't even notice because this is your talk. But I want to back it up for the audience just in case we have people listening that's like, what did he just say? So what is hard money?
So the difference between hard money and private money, hard money lenders are typically in the business of lending money. That's what they do. And they will loan it to you if you're like flipping a house. You know, everybody talks about, oh, these books you read and the courses and everything says you can do real estate with no money. And they are correct. They're 100% correct. You can do all the deals in the world you want with no money. It doesn't mean no money transfers hands. It just means it's not your money. So typically, you would use a hard money lender, which is an individual who's lending his own money. And it's called hard money because it's expensive. And so they'll lend their own money, but it's very short term. Typically, it's for 6 months. And that gives you enough time to renovate it, put it on the market, and sell it, and then pay back your lender. Private money is just individuals. And this is my definition of private money. I know some people say they have a private lending business. And I'm like, well, then you're not really a private lender. And you're a business lender. Mm. So to me, a private lender is an individual that you cultivated. You met them, you cultivate them into being a lender. They might just have money in their 401k, in their IRA, sitting in their bank account, earning 2%. And you're giving them an opportunity. We pay 12% on our private loans. So we're giving them an opportunity to make a higher return secured by real estate. They're not in the business of lending money. They're just somebody that we cultivated and are giving them a higher rate of return than they were making in their other avenues.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. So we got hard money out the way, private lenders out the way. What is a balloon?
So a balloon would be like, I'll give you, for instance, if it was an interest only payment, say it was a 5-year interest only, at the end of 5 years, the full balance is due. That's the balloon. The entire amount that was borrowed or the entire amount of the balance is due in full at the balloon. The way we do it, we amortize them so that there is no balloon. At the end of our 60 months, it's paid off. It's done. And I kind of came up with that because I started thinking houses got so cheap at the bust and houses were 30 grand and 40 grand. And then I'm looking for money and everybody's talking about 30-year mortgages. And I'm like, wait, I buy cars for 50, 60, 80 grand and it's a 5-year note. Why would a house have to be 30? And so that's when I kind of went back and did that math. And I said, you know what, we're going to make it 5 years and suffer for 5 years, but then be free for the rest of our lives.
That is a really good point. And I'm glad you brought that up because when you go to social media, there's a ton of people that say, why would you pay off your mortgage? Leverage, leverage, leverage. Use that equity to buy your next property and so on and so forth. And it sounds like what you learned in your process was that can crumble really quick, depending on how the economy does. And so you're taking this slow flip approach where you're like, you know what? I want to pay it off as fast as possible, then turn around and sell it to someone else and be that bank for them. And then that's how I'm going to make my money. So I think that is really interesting. And go ahead.
So it's interesting because they're not wrong. And this is where I try never to have the argument with somebody who still loves leverage and debt because they are not wrong. I have 178 houses now. I have 109 of them are paid off. And so many times people will be like, you know, if you can just pull that money out, you could buy so many more. And they are not wrong and they're completely right. But it's all predicated on the fact that everything stays going well. And the problem is, if it doesn't, and everybody's like, we're not going to have another crash like 2008. I'm like, well, that's great. But if we do, I'm too old to start over again. So if nothing ever goes wrong, then they are correct. You will make more money going that route. But if something does go wrong, I'm going to be the guy buying all the crap you lose to foreclosure because, you know, that's the way it's going to go. And if nothing goes wrong, you're going to laugh at me and say, oh, I could have made so much more if I went that other route. But only time will tell what ends up happening in the future.
Yes, yes. And I love that perspective. So with these loans, so you're turning around and you're selling them to people acting as the bank. What happens if someone doesn't pay? Like how does that work? Or has that even happened to you?
Oh, it happens. I mean, that's part of the business, part of any, even a bank, no matter how well you vet anything, people are going to default. So we do them through an agreement for deed. I'm sure you know what that is. It's basically, some states call it a land contract, an agreement for deed, a contract for deed. And basically it's an amortized note for 30 years, but the deed does not transfer. The deed stays in our name. And the way I explain it to people, I generally tell them when I sit at the table, I say, the way this works is if you buy a house with the bank, the deed goes in your name and then you pay for 30 years. If you buy a house from me, you pay for 30 years and then the deed goes in your name. It's the exact same end result. So if someone was to default, it's a regular eviction as if they were a tenant who didn't pay. We only invest in states that allow that. Certain states don't allow that on an agreement for deed. They would make you foreclose. And so we do not invest in those states.
Okay, gotcha. So that makes sense. And I can see how that can protect you, you know, as you're going through this process, because that was one of my concerns. I'm like, oh gosh, like these people, they're probably like, oh, it's not a bank. I can just, you know, do whatever I want. right. And it can land you in a lot of trouble. So if someone's listening to this and they're like, I want to get started in slow flips. What are like some quick tips that you can give people, maybe like your top five on getting started into slow flips?
So before we even get into the top five, Tiffany, I think I told you, I wrote a book called The Art of the Slow Flip, which basically goes over every part of the process step by step. And I'm going to give a free copy to all your listeners that want one if they go to slowflip.com, slowflip.com. And it goes through everything step by step. But what I would say, if somebody was interested, besides reading the book, because that's the best way to wrap your head around it, is first off to pick your market, because we do lower dollar properties. And sometimes when people hear the numbers I talk, they're like, you're out of your mind. These houses don't exist, right? And when I say lower dollar, I'm talking $30,000 houses, $40,000, $50,000 houses. So depending on where you are, a lot of areas, that's like you can't buy a garage for 30 grand, right? But there are entire states where they are thousands and thousands of properties available for 17 grand, 25 grand, 30 grand. So my first thing I would tell somebody to do is to pick your market. And by doing that, you can do it right on Zillow. Just pick a market and then put in a sub 50,000 and see what comes up. Now, some states you're not going to find anything, and some states you're going to find an abundance. And then, and this is the part people don't like, I always tell people, look at 100 houses before you ever even think about making an offer. Because if you do that, then you know what a good deal looks like. Mm. Otherwise, you're so used to houses being 300,000, you see one for 30 and you race off thinking it's a good deal. And then you find out later on it should have been 20, but you don't know because you only looked at that one, right? Mm. So pick your market. We run, you want to make sure that it's a viable market. And the way we do that is we'll run test ads to see, you know, advertising a similar house, similar price points, and see the response rate, just so that we know if there's a demand in that area for what we're offering. And then that's it. Then you close on it. Then we market it for sale. We get it sold. Most of my houses I have never seen in my life. The ones in my local market, obviously I've seen those, but I buy them in several states that I've never even been to. And we get them filled. I have zero vacancies. You know, they get them filled typically in hours because there's such a high demand for what we offer. And that's it. I mean, it's not a challenging business because we're not landlords. We operate like a bank.
Very interesting. This is so, like, first of all, thank you so much for the free books. I'm definitely going to get one because I'm so interested in what this is about and how this works. But you have dropped so many gems. I'm like, where do I even begin? Here's a question I have. When you're vetting people for these properties, what does that process look like? So are you checking credit scores and, you know, all those different things? What does that look like?
So I'm going to tell you two answers. So I train and teach a lot of people, and I always tell them, we're all adults. You can change and do whatever it is that you like, right? But I can tell you what I do is I do first come, first serve. Mm. And the reason I do that is, first off, I started buying in 1994. And when I started buying, there was a thing called non-qualifying assumptions. And they did away with, I don't know if you remember them, they did away with them in 87 for FHA and 89 for VA. But anybody could take over the mortgage with no credit, no job, no anything. They just had to work a deal with the seller. And it was like a sub too, but with the bank's blessing. Well, I started, my first 20 houses were all non-qualifying assumptions. And so when I sell, I feel like, well, I got to start that way. Why am I checking someone else's credit when nobody checked mine when I got started, right? And so I don't check anything. I do it 100% first come, first serve. And the second reason I do that is so that nobody can ever say anything. There's a lot of laws regulating, obviously, discrimination and stuff like that. And so by doing first come, first serve, you do not have to even think twice and worry about it because you're accepting the first person who comes with the down payment. And it's a challenge. A lot of people don't understand the laws with discrimination laws. People think, like, if you made a listing and you had 10 applications, you as the owner feel that you can read all 10 of them and pick the best person, right? And you feel like, well, I got 10 applications. I'm going to read all 10 and pick the one who's best qualified. But actually, the way the law works, it says you have to have a minimum acceptable criteria, and then you have to accept the first person to meet that minimal acceptable criteria. And so a lot of people don't realize that, and they take the best qualified person, which technically is discrimination. And so I try to avoid all of that by doing first come, first serve. First person to put the money in my hand is the one who gets it.
Gotcha. Interesting. And I did not know all of that. You gave us a great historical background of how the lending industry works. And now I'm like, yeah, I definitely need to get this book and learn more about this process. So can you give us that website one more time and also where people can find you if they were interested in connecting with you?
So the website where you can get the free book is slowflip.com. That's slowflip.com. And where you can find me is everywhere. I'm on all socials just under my name. So I'm on everything from TikTok to the new Threads to everything in between. And it's just under my name, Scott Jelinek.
What? You're on TikTok?
I'm on everything.
That's awesome. Well, I will make sure that I have all of that information in the show notes. So please check it out and check Scott out because I feel like I've never heard of this before, but it's an idea. Like, I'm just like, I'm over here like, interesting. So I will check it out as well. Thank you so much, Scott, for dropping so many gems in such a short amount of time. I'm like, my head is spinning with everything that I need to go and look up. But thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Tiffany. Have a fantastic evening.
All right, you as well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening, joining, and being a part of the Money Talk with Tiff podcast this week. You can check Tiff out every Thursday for a new Money Talk podcast. But if you just can't wait until next week, you can listen to previous podcast episodes at moneytalkwitht.com or follow Tiff on all social media platforms at Money Talk with T. Until next time, spend wise by spending less than you make. A word to the money wise is always sufficient.